are limitations embedded in the zone.
Yes.
Okay. Clarification. Maybe I'm missing a point here, but it seems to me there are two components to this. One is this question of whether you're calculating it basing it only on the residential versus the commercial.
Right.
The other is the recommendation that it's allowed only if the MPDUs are on site. Those are separate things. One might agree with Mr. Bryant that it should be on the full project, but also agree that that happens only if the MPDUs are on site. So maybe it's useful to disentangle those.
Okay.
We start.
Does anyone disagree with the staff recommendation that this increase, whatever it turns out to be, should be contingent on all MPDUs being on site? Do you agree that all MPDUs should be on site in order to get
yes,
any
increase? Yes, I agree with that.
There's a consensus on that.
Yeah. Okay. I actually want to ask staff about that. On site, and you would not permit an alternative would be on site or off site within the same CBD and within the same transit zone. One could say you have to provide them. Don't write a check. You got to build them, but it has to be within the same CBD if it's a CBD one or within the same transit zone. And I just wondered why you rejected that since you've said on site.
How often
we didn't really
happen?
Look at it that way, but that would be on site in my.
Well, then maybe we've got a language problem that we need to clarify, because I thought on-site meant this project.
Yeah,
and
it
comes to mind simply because I thought we had one in Bethesda where they
– Across
they
the were, street.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think of that as not being on-site. We knew where they were going to be, and so it had the advantage that we knew on our end. It wasn't somebody else went and negotiated it. We knew where they were going to be, and we said – yes or no to them.
I guess we didn't really think of that. but you're saying they would actually be constructed as part of the project, not some buyout where you
right,
money.
It's not a buyout.
It would actually be part of the project.
Is it part of the project? One might condition it to say you don't get the occupancy permit on the new fancy building mm-hmm. until there's an occupancy permit on the whatever else it is. Is it the same project? It may or may not have the same architect. May or may not.
Well,
but it's the part of the deal. But
you could, in fact, say the same project and still have different architects with different structures.
Right.
Yes.
So by combining it and making it a part of the same project gets at what you're trying to do, I think. The same project doesn't mean it has to be at the same specific location.
Well, it's not necessarily the same site because my recollection on the Bethesda one is we had an existing building that didn't need site plan approval. It was already there.
Right.
It otherwise would not have been before us.
Right. So and you
then we
want to say
vacant lot. That's the one that's before us.
All right. One might say on site or located in the same planning area and completed contemporaneously with project giving rise to the MPDU requirement.
Yes.
The one trouble with this is again, you're getting the bonus. Do you get a double bonus when you do that?
How do you get a double bonus?
Okay, you would get your FAR. Go ahead and calculate your FAR in this new method. So you get a 22% increase. Now that assumes that the MPDUs are on site. If it's 22%, you get 15% of the MPDUs on site. Now, if you put them off site, do you still get the bonus, which means you're getting more market rate units? I'm not sure that's appropriate.
Are you getting the same number of total units?
No, you're getting more.
You're getting more.
100 units, you get more units. Are you saying that the MPDU units aren't fungible in the sense that if they were moved, the total units can't be moved around?
I'm trying to understand the double.
Wendy, what he's saying is you get the 22% density bonus like the chart.
Right.
But you're saying now you can go ahead and do your MPDUs off-site. He's saying, do you still keep the units that would have been MPDUs, or do you subtract those now from
That's
what
right.
can be done on the site?
What you're doing is you're funding the units. I mean, you're creating a source of funding.
Under your suggestion, you would still have more market units than you would have had if you had done them on site.
Right.
See, so that's the question. Is that okay?
I'm not sure whether you would have, because there's this other building. We have a world in which there was another building.
Yeah.
In the Bethesda case, there was another building. Those were existing. Those units became no longer market units. They became MPDUs. In that particular case, it was essentially converting market units to MPDUs.
Well, but that's then from the point of view of the applicant, you're saying.
Well, I think what you have to clarify, I mean, you could write it so that you just have to make it clear that if the MPDUs are going to be located at a different site, they get that number of units gets subtracted from the number of units that were originally approved for the project. Let's say you have a 100
yes.
unit project,
right, so yeah.
you get potential for a 22% density bonus. That gives you 122 units. Out of those, the number of MPDUs has to be 19. So if somebody wants to locate their MPDUs at a different location within the planning area, the question is, do you still get 122 units in the first project, which is what John is calling double dipping, plus the 19 MPDUs somewhere else, or do you only get 103 units in the first project and the 19 MPDUs at the alternative site?
And John is suggesting that you go with the 103 units so that you don't double dip. And I happen, believe it or not, to agree with you from that standpoint, because a developer could still make more money, because now his 103 units, instead of being 1,200 square feet, are now going to be 1,500
that's
square
right,
feet.
That's right.
So he's still going to make money. So I can
that's,
see how...
That's more developed.
Yeah.
So also
yeah.
we want to make sure that the fact go back to what you pointed out was my convoluted question.
Correctly, so my ears.
And I know it was not my usual succinct approach, but my convoluted question was, in fact, when that shift occurs, I want to make sure that the 19 units off-site get the value of the larger units and not
yes.
the original units as smallly planned. As originally, smaller units as
that's,
originally
that's
planned.
How you equalize
that's how you equalize
that's
it.
That's how you equalize it.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that last part. I got the 19 and the 22. I'm with you
okay.
there. I didn't understand
yeah.
the
equalize. 103, the 103 units
yeah.
are bigger because the building's the same size, but the 103 units are bigger. They have more value, so you want to make sure that that value tracks with the 19 units that goes,
yes.
off, that goes off the site.
I'm sorry, tracks. They're now building $1 million condos.
Instead of $800,000 condos. So you
so
want the units off-site to make sure that we capture that $200,000 in additional value, or some portion of that $200,000 in additional. John's shaking his head.
You
can't increase your profit margins by just moving the units off-site and not giving the units off-site some proportion of the increased profit margin.
It's awfully, we're complicating this.
I like soaking developers, and I'd be happy to continue. Well, it's not about that, but I guess I'm not worried about who walks away with more. My goal
right.
is, will we have more MPDUs? I sort of go back to what this was about. I want to see the actual units in existence. That's mostly what I want to do. So if at the end of the day there are actual units in existence, then from my point of view, I'm happy even if, by gosh, some developer made money.
He puts the units
in existence.
He puts a 1,500 square foot unit in the building with 102 units and puts 19 400 square foot units off-site. That can't be what you want.
There are issues about size. This is not about profit.
Yeah,
it's about
to do that.
It's about
number
quality.
Of. I mean, there were suggestions in the staff, the council staff report about number of bedrooms. That's a, if we think we need larger units, that's a different matter. But
what,
it's
want
not
equivalent
about trying to capture.
Habit.
I'm not trying to capture the. I don't care whether they have quarry encounters or not. Or I mean, if the quarry
Fair
encounters
enough.
Are were in the market
that's,
rate.
That's in, no, not in the market rate. The quarry council paid MPDU.
Whatever. I just want them built.
You want the units to have equivalent livability.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we've spun all the conceivable hypotheticals. The question remains, do you want to limit this to on-site meaning in the same project, or do you want to also include MPDUs produced contemporaneously in the same planning area?
I like the idea of the contemporaneous planning within the same area, production within the same planning area.
All right. Who likes that idea?
Yeah. I don't like that idea.
I'm going to show of hands.
No. Yeah, I don't.
No, just a
okay.
Small vote. All right. And I like the idea, too. Okay. So we'll tentatively do it that way. Any more questions or concerns?
Well, the only question now remains is going back to Wendy's original question, because you essentially bifurcated this discussion.
Yes.
All right. So you still have that other question out there.
Oh, yeah, commercial.
Yeah.
Okay. So the staff is recommending that it should be
residential only.
The increase, well, there's not to complicate things further, but there's actually two parts to that question. They're saying you compute the additional density on the residential portion of the project only. So for purposes of computing the additional density, you only look at the portion of the project that's residential. And I personally agree with that because it's residential that gives rise to the requirement, and if you're going to compute it on the whole project, then you reduce the incentive to build residential.
That's
because
right.
It doesn't matter. They get the bonus even if they're building commercial. So that's one part of the question. The next part of the question, though, is if you could compute the density bonus just on the residential, but then let them use it on the commercial. That's another way to approach it.
Okay. And that's the idea. That's the incentive. That's the incentive. Because you're still getting your MPDU units, and if the incentive is there for me as a developer to look at how to maximize this piece of property, I'm going to maximize it so that, yes, I have no problem doing the MPDU units, but I still can walk away, as Wendy said, not necessarily with a whole boatload of money, but a little bit more money than I invested.
My question is, how is this any different from what's allowed now? You all haven't, this is no change.
That's not true.
They're already
That's
allowed to do
true.
This. No, they are. That we have a project existing now where they've built the MPDUs off-site and they built the, you know, the market units.
The difference is because before they're going to get project approval, they have to show us where they're going to build the units on-site. They're comparable to the ones they're building on-site, and we won't issue approve their plan until it's built into the project that they'll do it. Hence, no buyout.
Right. And it's not going into a fund.
We control it.
It's no buyout. The difference is no buyout.
Well, we haven't discussed buyout, and right now the way this is written, there is buyout.
Then we need to clarify. Where in our so-called cheat sheet, what's the column on the right, what should be received in return, where it said MPDUs on site and then or nearby, and however we're, that only. I mean, I understand that
that's
to mean
no buyout.
It means no buyout.
Period.
You have to do that, and you can't do it.
That was the first question I asked.
Yes.
Everybody agreed to that.
No buyout.
Okay, but the problem is, how are you going to tell the council no buyout?
Well, the same way we're telling them everything else.
Here's what we recommend.
And if there is no buyout, what do you recommend? If there is buyout.
But we're not. Look, if the council decides to ignore our recommendation, then that's another time, another issue. What we're trying to recommend is what we believe is the most effective way of maximizing what they put before us, which is flawed in terms of this legislation. It's flawed, and we're trying to get around the flaw and to recognize the fact that there is, in fact, the need for additional MPDUs, but at the same time, there's also a mechanism that's in place, and how can we operate within the framework of modifying a mechanism that's in place, but at the same time still increase the housing stock, and at the same time still provide an incentive for those people whom we want to build housing with their money. That's what we're trying to do. How to get them to build housing with their money so that they won't balk at that idea. And I think that the approach we're taking is moving in that direction.
The other thing we could say as part of our discussion is that in the event that there are, however it comes out, there are buyout provisions and there are waiver provisions of some kind, it has to be structured so that we don't waive and then get bought out.
Well, that's what I was going to address.
I said at the beginning, yeah. No.
So
that's not. Yeah, go ahead.
So, however, whatever happens, we can't. It would be a really bad idea for us to grant waivers on the understanding that it's going to be on site and then it not be on site. Tell them, but we think that's a really bad idea. Well, all we can do is tell them what we think about that. These proposals are that what we're saying is that the way it ought to be structured is that there's not, if you're waiving here, there's not buyouts. It's done as described. If they reject that and say that there will be buyouts, then it's a broader. We have to have a different conversation about how should it be structured so that. I mean, and it might be possible to completely restructure the way things are done, set the price before, decide before, redo the whole thing.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but I think what's difficult about this is first we need to tell them what we think they're saying now, and then we need to tell them what we think they should be saying. Because what they're saying right now is that you can get all the bonuses and you can get the buyout. That's the way this thing is written right now. So I think
we
should be saying, well, but it can be construed that way.
But if you do that.
There's no change in the legislation from the way it's always been. It's always been you could have buyouts. It just switches to DHCA. There's nothing in there that changes the process whatsoever right now. I think we have to say to them, you've got to change that process so that we have control over the development process and the requirements over the MPDUs and the buyouts at the time we approve, and then we don't get whipsawed by DHCA later and get bought out. Because without that, we can say provide MPDUs on site and we can say provide them off site and all that, but the bottom line is the reality is that's not the way it's written right now. It has to be completely rewritten.
Well, maybe by the time we finish with this, that kind of conclusion would have been
okay,
drawn.
Okay, well, we'll discuss
but
it
at this point, we're still working on those columns. And also, I would be a little reluctant to say to the county council, this is what you said to us. Because then we have to have a discussion about whether our interpretation of what they said to us is, in fact, a valid interpretation.
Well, that's our expertise. That's what we're supposed to do, give them our interpretation. They don't have to agree with us, but we write the zoning codes and we interpret them. That's our job.
But what I'm suggesting is that we can just bypass that and we can just talk in terms of what we believe is.
They should have said.
Or to be said.
That's right.
Well, you can say it politely, you can say it this way, you can say it that way, but you got to say it, and you got to have specifics.
Well, okay. It seems to me that we've indicated what we begin by saying what we think is the most important goal, which is creating more actual units.
Okay, right. Let's think big picture, because we just started getting
very... We have concerns about the proposals as... We have many concerns, and we heard a testimony about the confusing nature of the proposals as they exist. Among the most significant concerns, but not the only concern, but among the most significant is as structured, they appear to continue the practice that things might be waived on the understanding that they were going to be on site, but that we then have no control over that. That as structured, that's a problem. Then explain that we don't propose to critique line by line what the proposals are. Instead, our report is our recommendation about how this ought to be done, and sort of not try and go through in detail. I mean, from us, they get plenty of staff reports. not try and critique the various ones. Just say they got problems. They know they've got problems. They're going to hear about the problems. But then mostly tell them what we think ought to be done, which is what we're now talking about.
Well, you're off to a great start there, so keep going, because that is the big problem, that it does retain the same structure.
So now we're in the process of trying to reach agreement on what we think ought to be done. What we think ought to be done is, these four board members had the discussion about the green area. Might or might not discuss them in this order, but the green area and coverage area issue. Bonus. These are the issues.
Right, but the green area is a minor issue.
Yeah, fine. Right.
That's very minor.
I agree with that.
And even density is minor depending on how, you're looking at the density. The major issues are, one, what is the goal of it? Two, what is our role and whether we're going to continue with a system where we approve things and then they buy them out later? And three, how are we going to get the things on site or at least in a nearby area and result in more units?
I think we can continue as
okay.
we are continuing, and at the end of our continuation, we can see if that, in fact, is a conclusion that we've made and want to include that. But right now, I don't think that we should deviate from the approach that's been laid out and that we started with. I think you ought to continue, Mr. Chair.
Well, we're still discussing how the density bonus should be computed.
Well, and I thought that the approach that you posited, which essentially captures the idea of
computed on the residential portion,
usable
on any portion.
Usable any way they want.
Does that work, John? Greg?
Computed on the residential portion.
But it could be used.
How does that
I don't
help
think
us
you have to say that.
ADUs?
It doesn't work?
I don't think you have to say that because that will be their option. These are mixed-use zones.
It's their option anyway.
So they will increase or decrease the commercial however
so
they...
So it's there.
It's already
right. Okay.
So I wouldn't say that.
So I know you're reserving judgment, Meredith, anyone?
Well, not really, but I mean... Yeah, to me, these aren't the big issues. They come out different ways.
Everybody else comfortable with that general approach?
I don't understand how it helps us get more MPDUs.
It doesn't.
It doesn't. Why do we want to do that?
Do what?
Do what?
Allow the density bonus to be used any way they want.
No.
John just said they can.
They can do that anyway, is what you
said. Not the way we proposed it.
I'm sorry. You're the expert. Go ahead.
See, they can adjust the relationship between commercial and residential. They can adjust any way they want to. Now, what we're proposing is you only get your density bonus on the residential portion.
Yes.
That's it. There's nothing more.
They have 100 units. That's the residential component.
Yeah. They get.
Then the change in the law allows them to get 130 units, and let's say, hypothetically, 10 of those have to be MPDUs.
Whatever right? the sliding scale says, yes.
They can keep 100 units, build 10 MPDUs, and take the equivalent FAR ratio for 20 units and convert it into commercial space if they want to. Nonetheless, we're 10 units ahead.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And Charlie,
No?
I still don't buy it, because the whole issue here is calculating the increase based on the FAR, not on the number of units.
Right.
So the residential FAR was supposed to be what gets the density bonus.
Right.
Then that results in whatever number of units they can provide within that residential FAR.
Right.
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 But it would only be residential.
Right.
I misunderstood, because I thought you were saying that they could use the density bonus for whatever purpose they wanted.
Some people did say that.
And they can't. Or they shouldn't.
That's right.
Either you're saying two different things.
Two different things here.
You said yes to both of us, and I'm not sure where we are.
But that's how he got where he is today.
Let's just not say anything about it.
I think that's best.
Let's just talk about how
just
it's going to be
the way
computed.
It is.
And let's move on to public use space.
All I know is I agreed with Charlie. Whatever you said, Charlie, I agreed with that.
The whole problem here is that we're not calculating units, we're calculating FAR
right.
because it's
right.
a mixed-use project.
And they should just stay within the FAR of the zone.
Whatever density bonus they get for residential, the residential FAR should have to be used for additional
residential units.
But in a mixed-use
project, in the mixed-use
right.
project,
right.
is the residential FAR different from the commercial FAR?
Yes.
Or is it the total FAR of the entire building?
Well, that's what I thought.
On
that's
a
total
ratio
FAR.
Basis.
Isn't it the total FAR?
For the whole building.
The zone governs the total FAR for the whole building, but the density bonus would be calculated on the
residential
FAR.
That's right.
I understand that.
Yes. And could only be used for additional residential units.
Right. So they don't like my ideas, what they're saying.
That's
they
right.
They don't want to say that out right. They think my idea is stupid.
Well,
either way, it gets us more units.
Yeah.
We can let them make.
Maybe. But
yeah.
I agree with
you. I think this is a footnote in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly.
Let's just let it go. Yeah. We'll go with whatever you were recommending.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Public use space.
Okay.
This is the one where you disagree with what the bill calls.
Yes.
And is that number 11, the first one? Which ZTA is it? Just because I like to read the ZTA.
04-12.
Oh, okay. Got
both
it.
Of those are.
Okay.
Okay, what we are, first of all, the actual text amendment asks to reduce the requirement for on-site public use space under the standard method of development from 10% to 5% if MPDUs are provided on-site. Now, currently in three of the CBD zones, that requirement, standard method, that requirement is already in place. We're asking that requirement be placed on the other three as well. So reducing from a 10% to 5% if the MPDUs are provided on site. Now, the other portion of this is.
All right, let's stop there. Anybody disagree with reducing the public use space requirement from 10% to 5%? In standard method projects, which would harmonize all the zones.
Right. Remember, it's already allowed in three of them, not all six of them.
Any objections?
I have no problems with that.
Okay. All right, that's okay. That's done. Now talk about the optional method.
Okay. No, no. The answer is no. No reduction.
The optional method proposal actually asked to place public use space either reduce the public use space to allow reduction or even an elimination of public use space in the optional method allow public use space off-site. What we recommend is to not allow a reduction in the public use space in the optional method of development.
But you do allow it to be put somewhere else as long
That's
as
right,
it's within the same CBD.
But do allow it to be located off-site within
okay.
the CBD.
I support
okay.
that.
All right, that's fine. I can handle that.
Yeah.
Under
Good.
The size
okay. That was easy.
Now, so we're in allow increase in density now?
Yes. Okay. Now we're into the really...
The master plan.
Yep.
Sticky wicket.
So that's 13?
Yeah. Oh. This is to allow an increase in density and or building height. Up to the maximum in the zone. So this would allow you, an applicant, to ignore a master plan limit on density or height that was less than the zone, provided that the applicant is providing all of their MPDUs on site.
Right.
And could you just remind us where this there are not that many master plans that have height limits or density limits below what the zone allows. So we're really talking about, I think, three or four areas in the county. Could you remind us what those are?
Okay, let me do the best I can, because it's different. It's done different ways. Friendship Heights, so we heard a lot about the Geico, mm-hmm. Heck Company. Those are done in floors primarily. Bethesda Central Business District, the famous or infamous page 39 that has the height limits on the map. I think that's it for the height limits. Now, for density limits, again, anywhere there's a floating zone. So It'd be Friendship Heights. It would be Potomac in terms of the Cabin John Center. It would be North Bethesda, where you have the TSR and TSM zones, where the master plan says 2 FAR instead of 3. It actually has a bonus provision already in it for MPDUs. So you get it, not to complicate this.
Okay.
0.4 bonus on top of the 2 if half of it is MPDUs already written in the transit station zones. Now, seeing Nancy Wendt here, there is Upper Rock Creek, Olney, soon to be Damascus, Sandy Spring, where you have the RNC zone. In the RNC zone, it talks, the master plan is what determines the density. The density in the RNC zone varies from 1 unit per acre to 0.2 units per acre. And it specifically says in that zone that the master plan is to determine what the density is. Now, in the later ones, particularly Upper Rock Creek and Olney, we said, okay, there's a base zone, and then if there's MPDUs, we talked about a 22% increase in those zones. So this, in theory, might upset that, unless we provide language that it doesn't upset. So I think there's two questions here, two main questions. One is, do you want to go just to the maximum zone, which I think the text amendments, it says density as necessary. So in theory, you could go just to the maximum density in the zone. That'd be one yes or no. The second yes or no would be, do you just want to give them a bonus on top of what the master plan says? That would be a second yes or no. And a third yes or no would be, do you want to do this at all? Do you want to just have the master plans state what the density would be? Now, there are many master plans, just to further complicate this, where they're silent. It says PD 35 should be 35 units per acre. And those, it's not clear whether the MPDU bonus is on top of that. The one advantage to this is it would clarify that. So what the staff ended up with was in the middle, where you would give the bonus with some lots of trepidation, frankly, because of the particularly the Potomac master plan, which specifically limits it. But where we went with is just if you're going to get a add MPDUs, just add that as the bonus density on top of what the master plan says. So that's a long way.
What do you say? What do you recommend?
Heights
up to the maximum in the zone. In the zone.
So there you would go to the maximum in the zone. You wouldn't just increase the height by the percentage of.
Why
so
the distinction?
Why did you treat height differently?
Well, I think we probably flipping why we treated the density differently will probably answer it a little better. We looked at the density, and if the density in the maximum in the zone, typically we go beyond that to provide MPDUs. So to have it stated in here that way is makes it very unclear. Actually, it conflicts with how we typically deal with density. But in terms of the building height, we saw no need to go beyond what the building height in the zone does. We don't do it for other zones.
You've utterly confused me. Let's back up and see if we can recapitulate here. There's some confusion here about whether you're talking about going beyond the limit in the zones or taking the limit off what's the master plan. See, so you're saying that in density, say the delimitation in the zone or in the master plans, 100 units, and we typically say, okay, 100 units, the bonus is 115. And that's what we do now. It might be 15 on top of 100 for the limitation in the zone.
In terms of density, if this master plan is silent, say there's nothing stated about from the master plan standpoint, if the density in the zone is 100 dwelling units per acre, if you provide MPDUs, then you get your density above 20. If you go 22%, then you get 22% above.
So it'd be 122 units.
Yes.
Okay. Now the issue here is notice. Okay. Let's assume that there's nothing in the master plan, and the limit's 100 units. okay, on the density under the zone so that you can get 122 units. Now, why should it be any difference if the limit in the master plans 100 units? Why shouldn't you be able to get 122 units under the language in the master plan? Because the exposure to the citizen is the same. The zone says a maximum of 100 units. They come down here. They look at the zone. There's no language in the master plan. Their exposure is 100 plus 22% because that's the zone. Now, why is this position of that citizen any different when the master plan says 100 instead of 150? You know, the notice issue is the same. It's 100, arguably, plus 22%. The exposure is the same, a 22% increase over whatever the limit is.
Actually, I think there is a distinction. Because
well, give me the distinction.
The zoning ordinance, if it says the normal maximum in the zone is 100, the zoning ordinance makes it clear that you can get a 22% density bonus above that. I mean, if the calculation were to the zoning ordinance says what the yield is.
Well, we're
if the zoning ordinance says the yield is 4 units an acre, it also says that in with MPDUs you can get 4.88 units per acre. So that's clear in the zoning ordinance that there's a potential for a density bonus. The master plan may say 100 units. If it's silent, it's not clear whether the density bonus is above the 100 units or not.
That's a retrospective look. That's a retrospective look that just says, I'm concerned here about the citizen's exposure. I mean, now the zoning code says your exposure is 22% on top of 100 units. Show me what we're going to have to explain to the council, and that's why I'm asking this question, from the point of view of the habitat, you know, local area transportation review, school congestion, compatibility, all those things we look at. What's the difference between a person from a citizen who's getting an extra 22% on top of 100 units under the zoning code and a citizen that's getting 22 units on top of 100 under the master plan, in terms of they're right next door to each other? Parcel of land where you can have 100 units right next door, parcel of land, 100 units. The only difference is that there's a two-lane street in between them, right? One citizen, all of a sudden, 22 extra units on their property. Over here, no 22 units. What's the difference in terms of compatibility, local area transportation review, the school system, or are you essentially saying under the master plan there is some aesthetic magic to 100 units on the one lot and 122 units on the other lot?
I think we're agreeing with you. We say you should be able to get the 22% density bonus on the one where the master plan says 100.
Thank you.
Your original question was, why are we treating the density different than the height?
Well, I wanted to start with the density. Now I'll ask, what's the difference between density and height?
And I think the reason for that is just what you've been saying. The master plans typically limit height for compatibility reasons.
Okay.
That is an issue that we felt the planning board could address as part of their review process on an individual case. Master plans let's just say there is no typical reason why master plans limit density. They may limit density for compatibility, but they may also limit density for transportation reasons, for environmental reasons, for school reasons, whatever. So our view is that we should not be allowing the density limitations in a master plan to be overridden up to the maximum in the zone, but only to the extent that you would get an MPDU bonus. That's why we're saying that the height could be overridden up to the maximum in the zone on a case-by-case basis if the planning board finds it's compatible.
Well, now I'm absolutely confused. Absolutely confused, because you seem to be telling me that the prospects of overriding the master plan on the height limitation actually has some greater impact on the community than the density. I mean, I'm utterly.
I don't think so.
No, they both have big impacts on the community.
I'm comfortable with your analysis of the density because it makes it completely internally consistent. But I'm still confused about why you would say the building limit in the master plan is 100 feet under the master plan. Zone's 160 feet. That we would override, based on the MPDU legislation alone, 100 feet and go to 160 feet. Is that what you're recommending?
We're saying that you could do that
yes.
if needed to provide all MPDUs on site, if you could still find that it's compatible with the adjacent surrounding development.
So we do that compatibility requirement on a case-by-case basis because compatibility is why you impose the height limitation in the first place.
Except that we've never used that to deny any project since I've been on the board. Well, I just want to point out that council staff took a completely different approach to this issue when they were considering it for the RNC. They said that in the absence of any provision of the contrary, residential density recommended in a master plan would not include the added MPDUs. They said the staff supports a uniform policy that master plan densities not include MPDUs and that amendments may be necessary to master plans in order to change that, to review the density limits. I mean, John, it's easy to take an innocuous example of 100 units, but let's go to a real-life example. Just take the GEICO site, 500 units and the 22 density bonus there. Now you're going to 600 units. And the reason that the density was given so much consideration at that time is because of the severe traffic limitations in that area. You've got Western Avenue in Wisconsin. So they absolutely took it to the max. I mean, John says he doesn't even know how they're going to fit on the 500 units. So this is a serious consideration. John named at least five master plans that are affected by this. And it goes and take North Bethesda, also very serious. The difference between two FAR and three FAR in an area that is already so challenged by traffic that we really consider it one of our very most difficult problems. You know, it's easy because we're all very concerned about housing to say, well, we just can't, you know, we've just got to get rid of all this process and act quickly. But the truth of the matter is that when you're unified on these things, limited amendments to master plans are not a big problem. And that is the way to deal with the height and the density concerns, not to have a ZTA trump the master plan for the purpose of MPDUs, because now it can be MPDUs, next week and it could be, you know, well come on now, that master plan route for the ICC, let's get real, that's no good, so let's just pass along after 30 years of working that out and putting the land aside, we don't need that anymore. This can be the slippery slope towards really having the master plans become meaningless.
First of all, before we get to such
I took a pause, but I understand
the mechanics.
Alice has the floor.
I hadn't finished. And what offends me the most about it and why I think it's so important to use an amendment process is that the lack of notice. That they still exist. You go get your bound copy, and it all reads really great. And it's not right. It's wrong. This does not even provide for a mechanism to put people on notice. I mean, the average citizen, the average home buyer, me, I was an attorney at law, bought my house. I don't go read the zoning code before I make a purchase. And I couldn't, and even if I had read it, I wouldn't have understood it anyway. So, I mean, I can understand a master plan. I can read a master plan. I can look at a map. I can see what's going to be there. And I, you know, let's address affordable housing. Let's not, you know, viscerate our master plans. I mean, that becomes a bigger issue than the affordable housing issue. We're going to end up getting in a huge fight over that when we could just simply change this some, give the master plan the accommodation it needs, and go ahead with providing greater densities and greater heights through limited amendment process.
The irony of this, my colleague's remarks, is because I was just getting to the point after trying to figure out just what the staff is saying, the distinction in their rationale between heights and density, is that I think they proved my colleague's point, which is the fundamental issue is the legislation just going to leave it the board's discretion to go from, say, 100 feet to 140 feet on a case-by-case basis? Or is the position going to be there has to be some more intermediate ground, which is that, as the council staff recommended, which is, all right, go back and look at the master plan and at least provide notice under the master plan that in this given area or these blocks, meaning for the purposes of MPDU, as reflected in the master plan or a master plan amendment, you're going to be able to go to 160 feet. Maybe for nothing else, if it's an all-market unit, you can't go to 160 feet, because I'm also concerned about the notice issue. I think that what the council's proposed, or even what staff is proposing, doesn't adequately address the notice issue. I can see the intermediate, but there's three positions. Keep the building height as it is, and you only change it through a limited master plan amendment, such as we're now pursuing for Norfolk Avenue and surrounding areas in Bethesda. The other extreme is what the legislation seems to apply, which is at least for heights, case-by-case basis, go from 100 to 160 feet, no notice in a master plan. An intermediate point would be is for MPDUs only, we review the master plan, and we amend a limited amendment of the master plan, which says if you're coming in with an MPDU project, we've made a determination within this particular geographic area, you can go up to the master plan height. If you come in with just standard project, MPDUs, you're still limited to 100 feet unless there's further amendment of the master plan. But I'm very concerned that there's no notice in the master plan that suddenly this 100-foot building is going to be a 160-foot building. Gee, I happen to agree with Meredith. I think we should have some limited master amendment plan process to provide some notice to the public that at least in this area for MPDUs, you could end up with a 160-foot building. And that provides a master plan amendment process where the public can come in and tell us that that's wrong for reasons of compatibility and traffic and school, because these are fairly dense communities.
What's this side of the table think?
I think we're finished with the I'm sorry. I started to say polemics. That was no polemic.
Thank you.
The staff recommends that we go along with this particular change, and based upon my understanding, in spite of everything I heard, I'm inclined to go along with the staff on this for this particular one. We're talking about 0413, right? Is that correct?
Yes. Right. Yeah.
Provide the MPDUs on site as on site is defined.
The question I have is everywhere else in this package, we've increased densities by the amount, by an amount that's somehow proportional to the increased number of MPDUs. And that's what you're proposing for the density here. But when it comes to height, it seems that at least theoretically, you know, you could have a situation where I think there's some places in Bethesda where the height limit is 50 feet.
Yes.
In the master plan, and the zone would let you go to what?
90.
90. So, you know, the master plan is almost half.
80% increase.
Yeah, so the zone is almost 100% increase. So I wouldn't necessarily be happy with a situation where for a couple of extra MPDUs, they get to go from 50 to 90. If they're going from 50 to 60, and I realize, you know, I'm
thinking a floor. And I realize, you know, feet is not the issue for the applicant, it's floors. So is that a potential problem here? I mean, is your recommendation going to result potentially in a situation where is your recommendation going to result in that kind of a potential situation, or will height only be increased above the master plan number by an amount that's proportional to the additional NPDUs that we're getting?
We didn't do it proportionally. You only get the additional
Could you do it proportionally?
I mean, you could. You could calculate it. It seems like an odd way to do it, to be honest with
you. Are you suggesting
why is it an odd way to
do it? 22% of 50 feet, okay, so that comes up with whatever it comes up with, but it's going to be an odd number that's not going to match very well with your floors, I suspect.
Okay.
And that's the easy one, the 22%. Suppose it's 15 or 17%.
22% of the number of units rounded up, 22% of the square footage of the entire addition, since apartments are built on a square foot basis.
And I'd like to reinforce something that the chair just said that I think helps flesh out this issue, which is, I mean, remember that the master plan has been considered only, you know, a guide. So the idea has been that things just have to be consistent with the master plan. They don't have to be exactly. I mean, it could be a little taller, it could be a little shorter, it can be a little denser, it can be a little... But when you get such an extreme range of difference, then that's where you break away from any sense of consistency with the master plan, which also goes to the element of it being a complete surprise. So in other words, a citizen really can't realistically, you know, be upset if they read the thing and it says it's going to be, you know, 90 and it's 100, let's say. That's not the end of the world. But if something is 90 and it becomes 160 or 180, or if something they read was going to be 2 FAR and now it's 3 FAR, that's a huge jump. And that's what I feel like interrupts the interplay between the zoning code and the master plan that we have always had. And that's my concern.
Maybe this would help. You already have, as you've, on a few recent examples, some discretion on increasing height. Master plans are a guide. Mm-hmm. And I believe it was the TSR zone, or it actually says the site plan is the stage where the height is determined. I mean, one way to do is just take the height out of this in terms of the text amendment and just use the discretion that you already have.
And how much discretion do we already have?
Well, in that case, you went from 65 to 100 feet. Master plan 65.
Well, we already have that discretion, then what's...
Yeah, so why
what are we giving up
by... text amendment at all, then? Why do that? If you already have some discretion, why have a zoning something in the zoning ordinance gives you what you already have?
I think your analysis is... I have some serious problems with your analysis, because the TSR zone involved, it was very clear under the zoning text amendment that we had that discretion at site plan no matter what the master plan said. That
yes.
was under the text of that particular zone.
Yes.
Here we're talking about a different issue, which is to what extent preliminary plan comes in and, oh, it's 50-foot height limitation and it's 120 feet. Are you seriously suggesting to me that in Friendship Heights or Bethesda, that if a project came in right now, purely commercial project in a 50-foot limitation in the master plan language, Mr. Kaufman came in and proposed 120 feet on the theory that the language was only a guide, did we seriously propose an additional 70 feet or an additional 40 or 50 feet? I don't think we do that, even given our discretion, because that's not the custom under which this agency operates.
That's right.
Because so I think your argument collapses. The point is, what are we going to do about the situation where, as the chair said, there's an 80% increase in the building height in that zone because we're overriding the restriction in the master plan? And the question that I'm positing to my colleagues is, under this zoning text amendment, we would then have the discretion to do it on a case-by-case basis. That's a blanket amendment that affects all zones, so that's it. We'd have the discretion, and we'd do it our want, what we want. But the question is, should we do that, or should we have some better notification process about how the land use in that particular area is going to change based on the guidance in the master plan? I prefer the latter because I think we can do it fairly readily. We'd have to have a limited master plan amendment that relates only to MPDUs, and it seems to me that's the central position, it's kind of a centrist position, because we're not raising all building heights. We're saying only for MPDUs.
Right. Right.
A defined social purpose after notice. And I think there'd be reasonable majority on the board in most cases to make the necessary zoning master plan amendment after we review the collateral impacts of that type of a change. But if you just want it to be in our discretion, then let's be upfront about the fact that that's what the zoning text amendment would permit us to do, and that would be a departure in all practical terms from our custom in terms of how we currently interpret master plans. So.
What I was trying to do is come up with another way, working off what you were saying, which would say, don't do the text amendment. The planning board already has some discretion on the heights that you exercise. 50, 51 feet is okay, maybe 55. You have that discretion.
Right.
And then the rest of the story would be what you're talking about. If you want to go, if you want to pursue this farther, do that through the master plan process or master plan amendment process. Is that so bad?
No, it just wasn't clear what you were proposing, at least not to me, but then, sorry.
I guess where I am on this is I do actually think differently about height and density. I'm not sure we ought to put them in the same
category
because height is, for me, much more closely aligned with compatibility. That's what it's about. And the reason that we're there's some flexibility, and we've exercised some flexibility, and indeed one of the reasons I think we've learned that we need to be a little more careful about height limits in master plans is because we've learned that if what you're worried about is compatibility, you can actually make things worse by saying you can only build it 60. We think it's better to have a 60-foot building that covers the whole lot and doesn't have open space, or, you know, doesn't have other amenities. We think that's better than a taller, skinnier building that has other features. We for all cases, we think that's better, and I think we've now started to see that that's not always true.
Yes.
So, and I think we on Shady Grove, we start to step back a little bit on height limits for that reason. Because I think height limits have to do with compatibility, I am more comfortable with not either taking it out completely on the theory that we've got some flexibility or linking it to some finding about waiver where it's otherwise compatible, because it seems to me that's what it was all about to begin with, about compatibility. Density is about lots of other things. Density is about traffic and schools and environment, and you can't say, well, you know, waive density if it would be compatible. What would that mean? That's comparing things that don't have anything to do with each other. Why is there a density limit? We're trading the density for in ways that don't make a lot of sense to me. I understand in some cases, for example, saying, well, to the extent density was about schools or driving, greater density for senior citizens makes more sense because they aren't in the schools and maybe they're not driving, although I'm not sure about that one. But, all right, there's a trade-off that has something to do with at least some of the conditions. MPDUs doesn't connect at all, and I can't even conceptualize the trade-off. Heights, as I said, I could at least conceptualize a trade-off about compatibility, but I think we probably already have that anyway. It doesn't offend me to codify the kind of discretion that I think we have. There are advantages and disadvantages to codifying it. But conceptually, I feel like I need to deal with density different, in a different category than height.
So
on